Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
That's all right. I fought so that women like you could speak your minds. I am proud of you.
Thank you, Susan. We have to go, but it was such an honor to meet you.
Yes. Bye.
And just remember, a woman is just as good as a man.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Also, abortion is murder. What?
Well, that's the ending of a Saturday Night Live skit. I remember watching this live when it was on television and thinking to myself, here's an entire skit about young feminist women meeting with Susan B. Anthony via kind of a kooky little seance in her home, the suffragette of American history, and thinking, I know that she was a suffragette, but I also know that she was opposed to abortion, and I never expected Saturday Night Live to even admit that, even in terms of a joke. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about that Saturday Night Live skit and the Women's March on Washington and the new civics, especially in the classroom, with Joy Pullman. She's a regular guest, managing editor of The Federalist. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks. Can I add something real quick?
Sure.
Editors at The Federalist love Issues Etc. I don't have a sound. I don't have a sound for that, but you can add it in later.
Well, thank you very much. We'll think of something. Did you ever think that you would see Saturday Night Live, a skit with scripted words say abortion is murder? Admit that.
No, but it does fit a trend of there's been a lot more bold talk about abortion by its apologists lately. I think they're coming to grips with the fact that especially young women, but just Americans in general, really aren't on their team. And so they're getting grittier. They're getting more on your face. And so I can see that as part of that gradual trend in the entertainment media.
After the Trump election, they had a series of episodes and skits where they almost parodied the lifestyle left, and now apparently the sexual revolution as well. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm also talking about across, at The Federalist, Molly Hemingway has talked about abortion coming up in different shows like BoJack Horseman. We've seen it on, now you're catching me out on my pop culture, but there's been a number of television sitcoms and shows that are bringing it up as part of their storylines, and it's kind of an unusual wave of things happening. So I'm assuming the memo went out to all the writers in Hollywood, Americans are not really on board with our sacrosanct right of killing human babies, so we got to do something about this.
Do you think that for kind of the typical fan of Saturday Night Live, which may well be that kind of cocktail circuit woman who is strongly pro-choice, do you think she might have learned for the first time watching that skit that Susan B. Anthony was pro-life?
Well, it's hard to say because even people who are well-credentialed nowadays aren't very well-educated. So, that was something that I learned growing up, but I don't know that it's common knowledge, and I don't even know if someone would be Googling it up afterward in an effort to do that. But I could see that happening. And that said, I'm not sure that SNL audience is straight up the cocktail set, because I think it has a pretty good showing among kind of the Daily Show millennial crowd. So my siblings watch it and they live in flyover country. So, like most millennials, they don't support abortion either. So I kind of wonder what the folks there were doing. It wasn't really clear from their skit.
There's also the reality that I think you and other writers at The Federalist have pointed out many times, and that is the young women in America today just aren't buying lock, stock, and barrel. They may even consider themselves feminists in some sense, but they're not buying lock, stock, and barrel the orthodoxies of old feminism, are they?
Well, no, and so I was writing this piece. I'm reviewing the polling data on this particular question, and it basically shows that both young, I mean, and, you know, grown and middle-aged American men and women agree with some of the basic tenets of feminism. You know, men and women are equal in terms of rights, you know, we're equally valuable and so forth. So they all believe that sort of basic equality thing, but that they do not agree with what modern feminism has become, which is really moved beyond just basic equality and dignity for all human beings into being more of an advocacy dog and pony show for killing small babies.
What is the Women's March on Washington? What's it intended to be? How would you evaluate it?
Well, they describe themselves in some contradictory ways, but basically they're marching on Washington the day after Donald Trump is inaugurated, and they have said publicly this isn't about Donald Trump, but it's very clear that it is about Donald Trump, because if you read their about statement, their mission statement, it basically says, you know, at this time in history, we feel particularly devalued and threatened. All these, transgender communities, racial minorities, you know, sexual minorities, we're going to band together, and we're going to speak truth to power and show them, you know, that we're united, basically, they can't ignore us, et cetera, et cetera. So despite not being about Donald Trump, it is very much about his incoming administration and the fact that, you know, half of America essentially elected him, and it's a response to that fact.
They have kind of, as their mantra, and this is now decades old, a woman's body is a woman's body, mm-hmm. which is all just thinly veiled rhetoric about what they would call reproductive choice. Why is that so central for this particular segment of the female population to their self-identity as women?
I think it's because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, I'm sure, but the one that's coming up to me now is I think it's because they basically have turned from equality and giving women freedom to do good things into letting women do whatever they want, even if it's making a bad choice. And, you know, they want to have sex without making babies. And so sex makes babies, got to tell you, I've got four of them. That's the only way they occur. And I guess they're basically trying to deny basic human biology because to allow for unlimited license and no one able, you know, to say, look, this is something, the way that you live, the choices that you make affect other human beings. You created a life and you didn't want that to happen, but you did the thing that made it happen. So you're just trying to skip out on the responsibility for that act.
Very oddly, the organizers of the Women's March for Life in Washington, D.C. are claiming that this has garnered the interest of, not just the critical interest, but the interest in participating from conservative women. They mm-hmm. say, you know, so many self-identified conservative women mm-hmm. are joining us there because the concerns about women are so broad. What do you make of that claim?
I actually think that's really true. So I'm in touch with a lot of conservative women across the country as part of my job and just my interest in life. And we are worried, you know, we share a lot of the concerns that women on the left do about the way that the new president treats women. He talks about women. And I know, you know, he's hired women, he promotes women, but this is not a man whose behavior towards women sexually, you know, makes me feel like if he had done that to me, I would feel valued in the way that my husband's treatment of me makes me feel valued. So we're not really sure how that's going to translate into public policy. It may have nothing to do with it. But I do think it's fair. You know, I've heard conservative women say to me, I really feel abandoned by conservative men who are supposed to say, you know, we care about women, we protect their vulnerability, we respect them, you know, we pay mind to the fact that, you know, they are more vulnerable to being mistreated by men who are typically stronger. And so just for, you know, for that to have happened and be embodied in Trump's presidency is something that, yeah, women are thinking about.
One other, two other questions on that. In fact, will pro-life women truly be welcome at the Women's March on Washington, D.C.?
Well, it sounds like not, because what my article talks about is how the organizers of the march had admitted as a partner this group called New Wave Feminists, which if you haven't seen their YouTube videos, look them up on YouTube. They're so funny, I can hardly take it. But they are pro-life, a group of pro-life feminists. And then basically after The Atlantic published an article talking about, oh, this could be a transcendent movement, it could be women from all walks of life coming together in this march, it really wasn't turning out that. As soon as that article published, they basically banned New Wave Feminists from the event, saying, you know, you are not allowed to express your concerns as a woman if your concerns include abortion. So, you know, anyway, so that's their statement.
So what is that? Is that you're betraying the gender? Is it just simply saying we have no room for that opinion in this broad coalition of women's concerns? What is behind them saying, if you are concerned about the defense of the unborn, you're really not welcome to march with us in the nation's capital?
Well, I think that ties back to what we're talking about with at the Saturday Night Live skit, which is that modern feminism has become so much, so women's rights are now basically a term that's supposed to equal abortion. And so in their minds, if you don't agree with abortion, you hate women, you're against women's rights. So they're equating of those two terms that a lot, you know, majority of millennial women, a lot of, older women disagree with. The fact that that's kind of how their brain identifies the two terms, I think, is what translated into their desire to say, look, you're not really a woman, you're not marching for women's rights if you don't agree with us that abortion should be, you know, promoted.
One question without a minute before we take our break. On Susan B. Anthony, who was she really?
Well, in 1 minute, she's a suffragette. She, you know, promoted the ability of women to vote. She was strongly pro-life. She's a very rich, you know, woman. She has some, you know, positive aspects and some negative aspects. But I think if you're a woman, she is someone to check out and look as someone who bequeathed to us a lot of power that women have nowadays politically and that we may or may not be using well. And that's something to consider when we wield it.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new civics. You know, we were talking here recently in a group of pastors about how Lutherans don't know their confessions. And one of the other pastors said, you know, it's a lot like Americans don't know the Constitution. You don't even recognize the country you're living in if you don't. We'll talk about that after this.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler, or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Joy Pullman is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 18th. We're broadcasting from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we're turning to the subject of the new civics. She's managing editor of The Federalist, and you can read her columns and all the other great columns at The Federalist by going to our website, issuesetc.org. We'll have a link right there. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, let's talk about the new civics. What is civics? What should it be? What has it become?
Well, what it really should be is something that basically teaches young Americans how to function as citizens in our democratic republic. So America is a unique country. It is not just based on nationality, but it's based on a set of ideals. People come here because they agree, we know, with the ideals articulated in our Declaration of Independence, you know, that all men are created equal, before they're created with unalienable rights, and so forth. And so, but if you don't pass those ideals on to the next generation, they don't learn how, what it means and how it means to live practically under that kind of government. So it leads to not only widespread confusion, but it kind of leads to essentially the end of the country. When you do not have people in America who believe in America's uniting founding ideals, you don't have America anymore.
What is the New Civics?
So the New Civics, it's basically, it's a coalition of very left, and literally some straight up admitted communists, who are using terms that are attractive to Americans and a lot of public taxpayer dollars. I think the figure is $40 billion estimate annually in this report I'm talking about, to basically use young people to not teach them about what America means so that they can contribute to that legacy, but basically teaching them to look for grievances and to agitate against them, to create public disturbances, to advocate for a bigger government, a more socialist, communist type of government, and basically erase America as we know it.
It's part of the task there of that organization to kind of give us new civics, to erase
yes.
the civics as they have been taught.
Exactly. So it's the old civics is very knowledge based. It's idea based. You know, it's history based. And the new civics is very emotion based, not knowledge, you know, not rationality, not sifting through ideas and comparing and respecting the legacy you're handed on to that so you can continue to add to it and bring it forward to the next generation. But it really is attempting to dismantle what they see as, you know, racist, sexist, misogynist, so on and so forth, oppressive regime that we have in this country, and convert it into something that they consider more equal.
So tell us a little bit more about the report. What are the kind of findings that should stand out to us?
Well, I'm giving you a lot of salacious details here, but this is a 525-page report. I read the whole thing before I put it out. It's extremely scholarly, extremely detailed. It's by a nonprofit organization that is, you know, member-driven. It focuses on higher education, you know, done by a PhD and a number of his graduate-level assistants. So this, you know, so it's not just kind of a salacious, you know, trying to scare people. They have hard numbers. They have hard figures. They spent, I think, 9 months working on it. So the report goes into detail about kind of the founding documents, then organizations, and the money that jump-started these programs in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and forward. And then it gives four case studies from public universities. They selected Wyoming and Colorado as kind of examples of middle America to show this isn't just happening, you know, on the crazy leftist coasts or cities, but to show how basically this has become what is happening when education institutions talk about civic education. They're mostly talking about this kind of education, which is anti-civic education.
It makes recommendations, among others, that if you want to graduate from high school, you have to pass a test on the U.S. Constitution. Why is that necessary?
Or
a citizenship test.
Test, because they don't really like the Constitution. They don't want you to learn what it says or be able to talk about the ideas and the men that that animated it or the historical context. None of that. Well, the idea is basically they see everything through a political lens, and so therefore to them citizenship again isn't knowledge. It isn't contributing. It is basically about forming the right emotions and political ideas in young people so that they agitate for the kind of government that these people think should happen.
Does it explain what we watched happen during the last presidential election, at least in part, where a admitted socialist in Bernie Sanders could say, this is what I want America to be, elect me and it will be that, and the young people, in particular the college students or recent college grads, loved
Absolutely.
Him and his ideas?
I mean, and I wrote about that at the time too. Young people don't know anything about not only U.S. history, they don't know anything about world history. So when you say socialism, I think mass murder, you know, I think Stalin. They don't know who Stalin is. They don't know what he did. They don't know about Mao and his little black book. So in the absence of actual knowledge about history, including American history and how America was, you know, created to really something unique in world history that is precious, even though it has its faults, when they don't have that, they're susceptible to demagoguery.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's also written about her journey to Lutheranism. in the forthcoming Wittenberg Trail feature of the online Issues Etc. journal. We're sending the journal out this week. You can subscribe for free. Just look for the Red Journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. It's absolutely free. It's online. The Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you so much. It's great to talk to you in person.
Oh, thanks.
We're broadcasting from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, a little bit later on this Wednesday afternoon in Hour 2. Pastor David Peterson will join us. We're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, the Gospel reading Matthew 8, where Jesus cleanses a leper, and we'll talk about the faith of the centurion. That's coming up in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.